Hi, friends, and thank you for tuning into Monsanto's Duncan Today, formerly known as the Duncan Trussell Family, our podcast. Before we get going, I want to tell you a little story of something that happened to me this week that has really shocked me, and it's sort of put me in a disturbed state of mind because I just can't get it out of my mind. I was on a hike up in Griffith Park, just getting some exercise and carrying my kettlebells up to the top of Griffith Park, where I like to do my kettlebell workouts and my battle ropes with my pit bull. And on the way up there, I passed a man. I think he was a man. He looked like a man. He had a beard. He was wearing a bright red vinyl backpack, and it had a Spider-Man logo on the back of it. Now, This was a grown adult male that I passed. This wasn't some kind of malformed toddler that had been secretly injecting himself with his uncle's human growth hormone and had warped into a bearded hiker. It scared me. Sure, I had my pit bull gene with me and I had my kettlebells, so I had the ability to protect myself. I'm also a second degree black belt in jiu-jitsu, but I've learned from my years of martial arts training that you should only fight when someone insults you, and he didn't say anything. But I was creeped out. Why was I creeped out? I was creeped out because a grown man had made the active decision that he was going to go hiking with a baby backpack. It would have been less creepy to pass a naked man carrying the decapitated head of his grandmother down that trail than it would to pass a bearded man with a bright red comic book backpack on. Gentlemen, if you make the decision to wear a baby backpack out in public, then you must understand that no one is looking at your bright red backpack and feeling safe. Everyone is thinking that backpack is more than likely filled with the bleached jawbones of toddlers that you've skinned recently. No more baby backpacks. You want to wear a backpack that gives the impression that when you ask a girl out on a date, it's not going to involve a picnic table and two lunch boxes filled with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with the crust peeled off. Wear a man's backpack, and if you want to wear a man's backpack, then the backpack you should wear is Dot Susara. Go to dsgear.com and check out Dot Susara bags. These are hemp bags. They're antimicrobial. That means that they resist the germs that are commonly found on the Tweety Bird backpacks of wandering pederasts and murderers. Wear a backpack that conveys the impression that you know how to punch your fists through concrete walls. Wear a backpack that lets people know that you are an adult. And not just an adult, but someone who more than likely has smoke bombs that you can throw in front of you to turn yourself invisible as you rob art galleries of their precious paintings. DSGear.com. They don't just have awesome backpacks, they have a lot of other cool stuff, including battle pants. Not regular pants, these are battle pants. These are pants you wear when you go into battle. They also have some amazing gym bags and a really cool shirt made of hemp. And they also have, believe it or not, special designer chopsticks so that when you go out to eat sushi with your new Match.com date, she will understand that you are a professional raw fish eater and not some amateur whose fingers are filled with the festering splinters that broke off the cheap, run-of-the-mill, sweatshop-made chopsticks they dispense at local budget susherias. Go to dsgear.com. I actively wear the DS Gear backpack, and I highly recommend it. If you put my name in, you'll get 5% off this backpack. And why not show them some support, because they support Duncan Today, formerly known as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. DSGear.com. Antimicrobial, breathable, and Dot Susara actually translates into escaping from the drudgery of office life. And what better way to escape from your office than wearing a ninja backpack? DSGear.com. We're also sponsored by SureDesignT-Shirts.com. You can go to SureDesignT-Shirts and check out some of these shirts that are so soft they've been compared by President Barack Obama to the vulval dew of Eve in the Garden of Eden. What could be softer than that first dew droplet of sexual secretion that our sweet Eve, the mother of humanity, blasted out of her primordial pussy in the dawn of time? Go to SureDesignT-Shirts.com, check out some of these designs, order one of these shirts. If you put my name in, you get 10% off. And a tremendous thank you to all of you who have been donating to the podcast and all of you who have been supporting the podcast by going to the shop. We've got some awesome shirts there. We just are wrapping up our t-shirt contest and are about to have some new t-shirt designs in the shop. We've got great shirts there now. So if you have never gone to DuncanTrussell.com, go there and check out the shop. I'm quite proud of these designs and stickers and posters, and I hope that you'll order some of them. Also, a really simple way to support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, now known as Duncan Today, is to go to DuncanTrussell.com and go through our Amazon portal. If you are ordering stuff from Amazon.com, which you should do, I've recently realized that I now no longer have to leave my house, which is very exciting for me, because at this very moment, all I'm doing is wearing a diaper with lipstick stickers on my nipples, and I'm going to stay like this for the rest of the day. If I need anything, I just type in whatever I need into the computer and it comes to me. Lubricant, oysters, lettuce, it's all there. So if you're going to order something from Amazon, if you're going to order your textbooks, go to DuncanTrussell.com first. There's an Amazon portal. If you go through that, we get a small percentage from Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything. And finally, if you're into audiobooks, we are sponsored by Audible. And if you go to audibletrial.com/family hour, you will get a free audiobook. And these things are fantastic. These are one of the best ways to shield out the endless yapping of your mother-in-law. I know you're living with your mother-in-law. You can hear her right now in the room next to you as she lays on that stinky security blanket that she's worn ever since her divorce. You can hear her in there talking to herself, talking to that painting of the Virgin Mary that she hangs on the wall, muttering about the ancient ones who live within the mountains and will one day come back to destroy all humanity. Well, you don't have to listen to the weird jabbering gibbers of your insane mother-in-law who's on the verge of clawing your eyeballs out. You can go to audibletrial.com/family hour and download a free audiobook. And they've got a lot of great audiobooks there, including Timothy Ferris books, which I'm getting into right now. Even though it seems like before he writes any of his books, he does several rails of high-class crystal meth, you actually learn a lot. And I know people who've had great success losing weight from his books. And they are at Audible. So go to audibletrial.com/family hour. If you sign up for a trial membership, you get a free audio book. And finally, if you want to support the podcast and you don't feel like doing any of the things listed above, just sign up at DuncanTrussell.com for the forum. Join our forum. It's an amazing community, and we would very much like to see you there. Also, I'm sorry, I forgot to pay for the P.O. box. So if you've mailed stuff to the P.O. box and it's been returned to you, it's because I didn't keep up my payments on the P.O. box. I'm going to drive down there today and reopen the thing. My apologies for that. I hope you're all doing well. Now please enjoy this amazing episode of Duncan Today, the reboot of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, proudly brought to you by the wonderful people over at Monsanto, a farmer-friendly company that's not afraid to transform the quantum level of the essential nutritional components that we need to survive as a species.
Celebrities are fun to talk about. You never know what they may do. Hanging around, out and about. They're famous, friendly, and they do well.
There's nothing a comedian loves more than appearing on a panel show about celebrities. It makes them happy and gives them a chance to use their comedy chops to talk about the different things that celebrities do, from good to bad. I decided that I would give my comedian friends a chance to feel proud and get on a show where they could do what they do best, talk about the celebs and celebrity culture. So everyone, please welcome to Monsanto's Duncan Today, formerly known as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Welcome to a podcast that's not afraid to say those edgy things about celebrities that you've been thinking, but you just didn't have the guts to say. Today's guests are my friends, Nina Tarr and Brendan Walsh. And of course, welcome my little nugget sidekick, Frida, a Romanian midget that we saved from a Romanian brothel where she was being exploited by the mafia. Now enjoy the show. Hey everybody, thank you for tuning into Monsanto's Duncan Today, formerly known as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. As many of you know, the podcast is taking a turn for the funny and successful instead of the land of paranoia and drugs that it was in before. This show is now going to be completely dedicated to celebrities, and I'm going to have a new panel of celebrity comedians each week. But before I introduce the comics, I want to say hello to my new sidekick on the show. She is a midget flown in from Romania. Folks over at Monsanto actually saved her from a sex slavery camp and brought her over here to be a sidekick on my show. Everybody say hello to Romanian little person, Frida.
Hello, everybody.
How's it going, little nugget?
Oh, I'm good. How are you, Duncan?
I'd be better if you didn't smell like onions and old beef. Hey, and that's my celebrity comics here. I'm here with Brendan Walsh. Brendan Walsh is friends with Chelsea Peretti and Aziz Ansari. What's going on, Brendan?
Hello, hello, hello. How's it going, Duncan?
It's great. How's pilot season been treating you?
I got to tell you, I think I might be, fingers crossed, but I've been going on a lot of auditions, and I think I might land something this year.
That's exciting. Glad to hear your career is going well. And I'm here with Nina Tarr. Nina Tarr is a comedian who's friends with Tom Green and Joaquin Phoenix. What's going on? What's going on in the world of showbiz for you, Nina?
Hey, Duncan. Oh, I'm doing really good, you know, just getting a lot of gigs and everything. And, you know, all is well. All is well.
That's lots of fun. Today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics and something I really just can't stop thinking about, which is celebrity moms. What do you think about celebrity moms, Frida? Who's your mom? Is your mom a little midget too?
My mother passed away when I was 12 years old.
So we're going to talk about what's going on out there with celebrity moms, and I'm taking this directly from Star Magazine. Guys, Britney Spears, she's a hands-on soccer mom, but sometimes she leaves her boys in the gifting suite and forces strangers to watch them all day. What do you guys think of that?
I got to say, you know, it's popular to hate on Britney Spears, but she's a great mom, and she's a great entertainer, and I think everybody's got to stop drinking so much Haterade and just worry about their own business.
Yeah, no shit.
I don't know. I mean, I have to disagree with you, Brendan. I feel like, you know, Britney is still a psycho. She's always been a psycho. I mean, you're going to let somebody
who's diva. She's a diva.
I'm going to give the final word on this. I think Britney Spears is a great mom, and I think any kid's lucky to be her kid, and I'd feel so happy.
She's rich. You can't be a bad mom if you're rich. And she can give those kids anything they want.
You got me there.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people are really up in arms lately over this NSA wiretapping thing, but I'm going
to
read this.
So annoying, like, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? I mean, what do you have to hide?
So many paranoid people worried about this wiretapping thing. I don't, you know, wiretapping, wire schmapping, who cares? If you're not a terrorist, you don't have anything to worry about.
Totally. I mean, I totally agree with that. Seriously, people just need to, like, just relax. I mean, who cares? Like, if you want to listen to me and my boyfriend Skype, who cares? You know, maybe, yeah, so the government's probably seen my tits a bunch of times. Whatever.
Here's some pretty interesting news I didn't know about Gwyneth Paltrow. She's 40, and she's not looking great.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. She looks great for 40.
She looks great for somebody. She looks like she's been dragged around by the Grim Reaper through Death Diary. I think she looks like
shit. She needs to moisturize more, seriously.
Yeah, she should squeeze the tears out of her neglected kids into her face. So, you know, she's got a baby.
Named Apple.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, with, what's his name?
From Chris Martin.
Yeah, there you go.
Coldplay. Oh my God, I saw them at the Hollywood Bowl last year. And Gwyneth was there with the kids. And I gotta tell you, if you want to look for a family to model yourself after, that is a solid family
unit. They're beautiful together.
Book.
I mean, like, they all...
And those kids are going to be beautiful.
Oh, my God.
Grow.
They already are. They're gorgeous.
They're gorgeous kids, but they're going to be beautiful.
Yeah, and, you know, she's been taking a lot of heat because she admits that she often leaves her kids feeling hungry because she refuses to feed them carbohydrates, which are critical for fueling the brain and muscles in the development stage. And Star Magazine actually gave her a D. As a mom.
Okay, first of all, everyone knows carbohydrates are not that good for you,
nope.
Okay? You got your kids on Atkins. I mean, that is a great mom, okay? Gluten, a lot of people, I'm gluten-free, you know?
I'm allergic to gluten.
There you
Me
go.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Hate the stuff.
Okay, so, you know, just because she's taking preemptive strikes for her children's health, I don't think that makes her a bad mom.
Also, this is a family, they're a good, solid family unit, but they're in the public eye. She can't have a bunch of fat kids running around. I'm sure she gives them enough carbohydrates for their brain development. I mean, there's a limit, though. She can't be embarrassed by having sloppy-looking kids.
Ugh,
Frida, why are you crying?
When I was younger, we didn't have enough food for our family.
So, where are the wires that work this thing? Because... This is an adorable Muppet. Are you a Muppet?
I'm just expressing my feelings. And I feel like you're making fun of me because of my accent.
Frida, how do you get fed? What do they do? Shove lettuce up your ass?
No, I eat just, I'm a normal person. I just have a disability.
Put another hat on her. I like when you put those silly
Other
hats
one squeezes
on
my head.
Guys, can we get a cowboy hat on Frida?
Oh my gosh,
she looks
be
so cute.
Adorable.
Frida, real quick, before we go on to our final celebrity mom grade, what do you think about this NSA wiretapping? You're from another country. Surely you think it's okay for the government to monitor and tap every form of communication going between all the citizens of the country?
No, Duncan, I have to disagree. You know, wiretapping and any monitoring systems of any people, that is the first sign of totalitarianism. In my home country of Romania, you know, when the government was overthrown and the rebels came...
Guys, we're going to have to cut...
Feed her a cookie.
Yeah, we're cutting. We're going to cut to commercial real quick.
Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland Security begins with hometown security. That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure. If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance. Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
All right, we're back. Frida had to take a little bathroom break. I guess she wasn't feeling that great.
Maybe somebody should water her or she'll grow.
Kill me. Seriously.
Weed, but not that wacky tobacco. Kids stay off drugs for real.
Honestly, it seems like she's been engaging in a little bit of the chronic based
I
on
know.
Her level
like,
of paranoia.
Did she like take a hit of acid before she came on the show? I mean,
it is the beginning of totalitarianism.
Oh my God.
In Romania, I am like this. I mean, what?
Smoke another left-handed cigarette.
Crazy bitch. So, look, guys, we're gonna close out here on Denise Richards. She's got two sweet little kids, Lola and Eloise. And, God, she spends every moment with her kids. And she gets bonus points for taking in Charlie Sheen's twin sons, Bob and Max, while their troubled mom, Brooke Mueller, bounces in and out of rehab. And she gets an A-plus from Star Magazine.
Who's this? I'm sorry. I was reading it last weekly.
It's Denise Richards.
Oh, God. She's a great mom.
Boring. I mean, seriously, where is the scandal? I mean, the most interesting thing about her is that she dated Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Okay? Like... What's with your kids? I mean, let's see some stuff. Like, you know, what's going on? Do they have tattoos? You know, I don't know. I'm just bored. Boring.
I'm bored of her, too, I gotta say.
She looks great for having a bunch of kids, and her boobs, I mean, I hope I have her boobs after I have three kids.
Yeah, but she is boring. It's kind of like if a loaf of bread grew nice tits.
Well, she could be getting out there a little bit more. You don't see her out there partying with the Kardashians or Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, she definitely needs to do that.
She could be in the public eye a little bit more. Have a little bit of fun, Denise. Let your hair down.
Get out there, Denise. Have some fun. Nina, thank you so much. Where can people catch you next?
Well, you can go visit me on my website at ninatar.com. That's with two R's. And I have a bunch of dates on there. So come out and say hi.
Come out and say hi to Nina. And Brendan, where can we catch you next?
Well, as always, follow me, Brendan_comedy on Twitter, at Brendan_comedy.
Funny.
This weekend, I'm going to be performing. I'm doing a benefit show for the troops. So, you know, you got to support the troops.
Hell yeah, you do.
Support the troops.
So come on out.
Guys, support the troops. And come on, guys, if you end up hearing somebody getting a little weird about this wiretapping stuff, you can contact the Department of Homeland Security only if you think they're going overboard. Some people are acting a little weird.
I'm
going
to contact the Department of Homeland Security and send them a thank you note for keeping an eye on us and keeping us safe.
And I'm
seriously.
So, yes, that's going to be, and guys, go to DuncanTrussell.com. I'm going to have the address for the Department of Homeland Security. Send them thank you notes for keeping us safe. Thank you so much for tuning in to Duncan today, and a big thanks to Monsanto for sponsoring this show. Thanks, for you guys are great.
Support the troops.
Hail Monsanto, hail the NSA, and thank you, America, for allowing us to live in the way that we live in this wonderful country. Today's guest on Duncan Today, formerly known as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, is a really fascinating human. He's a psychonaut, a world traveler, an entrepreneur. He's got a fascinating website called warriorpoet.us. He runs a vitamin company with Joe Rogan that sells these awesome pills that I like a lot called Alpha Brain, which are kind of low-level Adderall. Wonderful things. But aside from all that, he's just a super cool guy who has a great deal of experience with psychedelics, and it was a real pleasure to get to chat with him. So everybody, please open your hearts. Send out your Monsanto-level love to intertwine with the amazing warrior poet himself, Aubrey Marcus. It's Monsanto's Duncan today.
You don't have to have done anything wrong. You simply have to eventually fall under suspicion from somebody, even by a wrong call. And then they can use the system to go back in time and scrutinize every decision you've ever made.
Greetings, Aubrey. Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Yeah, right on. What's going on,
Hello.
Duncan?
Hello.
Good to be here.
You've been requested so many times to be on this podcast, so it's great that you're here. I'm really excited to talk with you because I've heard a lot of amazing things. I know you sometimes,
right?
Like when I'm with Joe, we'll talk for a second, but we've never really gotten to chat at all. So I'm looking.
And the universe wants it.
The universe wants it.
Yeah.
But you. So now here's. I'll tell you what I know about you.
All right.
And then you can sort of help me fill in the blanks, because what I know about you is that you are this psychedelic entrepreneur. Person who has created a very successful, what would you call it, a nootropic company, vitamin company, supplement company?
Well, we call it total human optimization. We're trying to basically take all fronts from the mind and body and provide the tools to improve them, fitness, nutritional supplements, and actually functional foods as well.
Oh, let me stop you there. Just for all the, like, there is a contingent of, like, paranoid people. I don't even know why they listen to this, who right now are like, you fucking shill. This whole thing's a goddamn commercial. I'm not getting, there's no sponsorship here, friends.
Nope.
This is just, and also I can say in the most honest way, because I'm not sponsored at all. I can say in the most honest way that I do like some of the Onnit products, particularly Alpha Brain, which I chomp on from time to time, and it helps with hangovers and also reminds me of a kind of low-level dose of Adderall. So,
word.
That being said, yeah, so that's you have...
So that's the business side.
That's the business side. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that there's also this other side that is a... for lack of a better word, and forgive me for calling you a psychonaut. You're somebody sure. who is an advocate of psychedelics and has gone very deep into that rabbit hole.
Yeah, absolutely. And it started pretty early. I finished, wrapped up high school and went off in the desert out between, you know, the Mexican border around there. And this was some years ago when that wasn't as sketchy as it is now.
Yeah.
And met a shaman up there in the mountains and drank a big old cup of mushroom tea. And from there, that launched me into this path. I could not go back from that.
How'd you find the shaman?
Through some family connections, actually, that she had worked with some people in my father's side of the family. And, you know, I was like, all right, Aubrey, you're about to be a man now. Well, I guess I already was, technically. But finishing high school, it seemed like the right transitionary period because we're lacking in all these rituals that are naturally enforced by society. We're one of the few societies without these kind of coming of age rituals.
Yeah.
So on my father's side, they had the sense to say, hey, go out in the desert, see this lady, and don't ask questions.
Where on the father's side?
Well, my father was probably one of the pioneers, and then there was a few other in that side.
So your father also used psychedelics,
uh-huh.
ritualistically.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's so cool. Because so many of our fathers, the ritualistic intoxicant is booze.
It's true.
And the ceremony is throwing your mom into the wall.
Booze and a belt, yeah. That's terrible. Yeah.
So that's incredible, man. So yeah. your father actually, or your family said, okay, it's time.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for you to go. And
well, that side, the mother's side was open to it, but we're like, what the hell are you doing?
So your father, what does your father do?
He was actually a commodities trader.
Commodities trader. Mm-hmm. So again, you have another psychic. You're following in your father's footsteps because this is a very strange, and forgive me for stereotyping entrepreneurs or commodity traders,
yep.
but you don't often see these two lines cross as far as
That's
I know.
True.
Usually
it's
people
pretty unique.
Yes, it's very unique. So your father is a commodities trader who is also drinking mushroom tea with shamans in Mexico.
Right. Yeah, he got hooked up originally with Stan Grof and started doing the holotropic breathing and some of other of
sure.
Stan's work. And then from there got introduced to a couple really awesome people. And one of them was this shaman who worked out there in that region.
We just had Joan Halifax on the podcast, who was married to Stan Grof.
I've met Joan. Joan used to come over to our house when I was a little kid. Holy shit,
that's weird.
It is wild.
Isn't it strange?
I remember, yeah.
Now that's a really curious thing, isn't it? Like, that's a very... Because I've talked to other people who have met her or her. Like, no, my friend Daniela Bolelli was talking about how he used to read her
podcast too, yeah.
books. And it's very fascinating
it
how
is.
There really is like a, what they call the Sangha, or like a network of people who are all kind of connected or end up getting connected to this.
And you know what was also crazy? I'd pretty much lost touch with that shaman I went out to see the very first time. I saw her a couple other times since then, but pretty close in proximity to that first session. I ran into her in Oakland at the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies conference recently, just ran into her. So yeah, I mean, the group kind of stays pretty closely knit.
It's curious, and I want to talk about that more, but I want to talk about, can you just walk me through what that was like to be a kid,
mm-hmm.
and to meet a shaman in Mexico? The whole trip, like, how did it start? Like, you flew in?
Flew in, and then you know, she picked me up and had a big shaggy dog in the car and was really sweet, and in a genuine sweet way, not that affected kind of sweet way.
Sure.
And you know, we just talked about different things, and she didn't really tell me too much about what we were going to do. I think she was kind of feeling it out at that point, whether I was going to be ready. And then we got to this little place where she has like a clay hut out in the mountainous area out there. And, you know, I spent the first night there just kind of getting my head right, eating very clean, limited diet. And then towards dusk of the next day, late in the afternoon, she brewed up a tea and we did a little ceremony with some sage and set my intent. She had me write my intent of what I would like to experience, but I had no idea. I was like, I want to learn things.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't really know what that was all about. And then, you know, I was pretty nervous at that point too.
I would have been.
Yeah. I went out and I remember I like wanted something to, cause I didn't know what was going to happen to me. So I found a rock from outside and it was this really smooth rock. And I was like, all right, if nothing else, I'll remember that this rock is real and I can come back and like hold it. And so I had this thing that I like clutched to me like a blankie or a, you know, teddy bear or something like that. And it was a rock I picked up and drank the tea. And the first feeling, that tingling, you know, sensation that you get from that psilocybin, was just overwhelmingly strong. And from that point, it increased and increased. And I felt my bodily functions start to drop down. My breath seemed to evaporate throughout my body. And the most, one of the most significant moments of my life was that first time where I literally felt my consciousness, my spirit, whatever you want to call it, raise up out of my body. I look back down at my body and I go, oh shit, I'm not that thing.
Right.
And from that point, it was the whole game changed.
Yeah. Well, and that is a game changer. And I've heard various versions of that story. What was the shaman doing during this time?
She was being very quiet and just kind of sitting in meditation there, just watching.
Like holding the space.
Holding the space. Yeah, exactly.
And so you came out of your body. Did you have any experience with entities or?
I didn't, you know, and the entities have only started coming in since the ayahuasca. I've never really had two. Well, that's not true. I did have a. So in another instance, that time there was no entities. I just kind of raised up out of my body and I had a lot of realizations when I was there. I actually, you know, kind of realized what it would be like to die when you die, because I was able to review my life with this perfect clarity. Like all the rationalizations, all the bullshit that I had been telling myself was completely gone. And I was able to see exactly what I'd done well and exactly what I'd done, you know, wrong.
Yeah.
You know, if I've treated a girlfriend wrong, I was like, oh shit, that was a dick move.
Yeah.
Why did I do that? And if I did something well, I was like, okay, you know, you did your best there. And so I kind of realized that when you die, that's your heaven and hell that you create. You know, that moment where you look back and you can't take your eyes off your actions and your deeds. You're either filled with pride and love for a life well lived, or you're filled with the sheer horror of having to review without any way to kill the pain, without any booze you can take.
Look at all the porn I watched. I watched over 7 years of porn.
Yeah. I don't think the spirit really cares about that, though.
I don't either. I do know that life review experience and that comes with mushrooms, and I it can be quite brutal. And it's if you're not ready to get that level of truth, you have to have a pretty. I think one thing that you need before you start hanging out with psychedelics is you have to be fond of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And well, everyone says they want the truth. You know, everybody pretends to have a fondness for the truth, but it's not, it's really not a comfortable
thing.
Yeah,
the truth kicks you in the balls more often than not.
Yes, quite literally.
Right.
And it's a, and that's what, so when you hear people who talk about having terrible trips on psychedelics, quite often that's triggered by an encounter with the truth.
Sure.
Big T truth, which is like, you're going to fucking die.
Right.
And that's a heavy thing for a lot of people, but once you get to the other side of it, it's like the greatest gift
you can get, because you don't fear it anymore. You know, your opinion of death is, that would be a shame because I didn't get to do the shit I wanted to do,
yeah.
But you're not scared after you've been there. And ayahuasca is perfect for that. That's why they call it the vine of death. It will force you to go face to face with that, with your death. I mean, it's just part of the standard protocol for ayahuasca. You know, and it does that to pretty much everybody. And it's pretty intense when that
you got
to
die. Happens.
You got to die and you got to accept it. You know, for me, I've told this story a few times, but, you know, that very first ayahuasca session down in Peru in the jungle.
When was this?
This was a few years ago, 2 years, 2.5 years ago. And that maybe only 2 years ago. But that very first session, you know, drank a big cup of brew out in the middle of the Peruvian rainforest, no power out there. There's some generators they run during the day, but you know, old traditional shaman doesn't speak any English and was doing his Icaros, his songs.
Yes.
And the ayahuasca forced me to face as many horrific deaths as it could. It started going through the usual suspects. I had snakes crawling inside my body, eating my organs. I had spiders coming in through my eyes and exploding in my brain.
Fuck.
One particularly heinous thing, there was this vine of thorns, and I was holding onto the vine and sliding down it naked, which is even more horrific. Yeah. Because it was like ripping up my balls and my ass and like just sliding down, tearing up my flesh. And I was kind of okay with that because of the training I'd had with the and experiences I'd had with the other shaman and a few others. I knew to just witness it, allow it, and like, okay, this is what's happening today. So it didn't fuck me up. And I think the ayahuasca needs to get you fucked up. And for me, my fear is, you know, I've had some people in my family die of lymphoma.
Right.
And so that was my button, you know. So ayahuasca goes and tells me, okay, now you got lymphoma, by the way. You're going to die.
Yeah.
And I was like, no way. No fucking way. And I started to resist it. And I started to get a little panicked. It's like, nope, you're going to die. You got it already. It's late stage. You're done, son.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, my God, no. It can't be. It can't be. And then finally, I said, you know what? Fuck it. If that's the worst that's going to happen, if that's my fate, so be it. And at that very moment, the whole thing shifted. And I felt like one of those people from Avatar where the fibers of Awa came in and just cradled me back to the earth.
Yeah.
And it was the most peaceful absolution of all of that terror and fear that I've ever had. And at that point, that was my death and rebirth.
That, see, the what you just described, that feeling, I think that feeling is so... I think it's, number one, I think it's accessible without psychedelics, but I think, and I think people access it all the time, but they close themselves off to it because they're sadists, or rather masochists, and they don't feel okay with that level of happiness. They feel like if they hit that level of happiness, they won't accomplish anything anymore because they have paired their accomplishments with suffering. They think the only way that I can succeed, the only way that I can... that I'll get anything done is if I'm afraid of failure, or which is just a fear of death dulled down to like at the societal level, you know? That feeling, man, I had that feeling recently because I got one of my testicles chopped off because of ball cancer. Right. And recently I started jogging. So I've been running like 5 miles other day. And it's great. But so, also... what happened in the beginning was my one poor little darling ball was like slapping against my leg as I was running, you know, just like getting, it's just dealing with like sudden exercise. So
it's
started
got double duty now.
Yeah. It's having to produce so much, you know, double jizz. It's having to work really hard. Now it's getting like earthquakes every other day. So my ball started hurting and, I was like, really, I started getting really scared because I'm like, oh, mother fuck. My other ball is going to, I'm going to have to get my other fucking testicle chopped off. I'm going to be a harem guard. So it was terrifying, man. Sure. And so, you know, I went up with Rogan to shoot this thing for sci-fi looking for Bigfoot and, Rogan got, you know, Joe's got like, I always forget how strong his fucking weed is, man. Yeah. I don't know where he gets it or what it is, but I always forget. Mm-hmm. And you forget, and then you're like, yeah, you're just smoking it like normal weed, and you forget. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, God. Oh, God. And I was sitting, we were in some weird little, like, some weird little bar out there, and I'm sitting in front of the fire, and like, you know, I'm not going to tell. I don't want to. There's no point in telling people if you think you have cancer symptoms. You just have to get them checked out yourself and then tell people. Sure. Why scare? Why let burden other people with your fear? But I'm sitting there with this absolute terror, and it's very similar to your story because I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is it, man. You're going to be a fucking eunuch, and more than that, you're probably spread. You're probably just going to die. You're going to die of cancer, die of cancer, die of cancer, sure. die of cancer. The brain starts chattering that, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, all right, man, I guess I'm going to fucking die of cancer. Okay, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And then it's so weird. Immediately, this sense of like, whoo, this spaciousness, this rush of like, yeah, but still, everything's perfect.
That's right.
What the fuck? Everything's perfect? How is that possible? Your rational mind can't accept the two things existing exactly parallel to each other. Catastrophe and destruction somehow coinciding completely and perfectly with this innate safety and perfect tranquil bliss, or as my mother called it, being held. Those two things, man, it's very hard to...
It is. And, you know, it's such a, seems like such a simple choice that you made, you know, to say, okay, so be it. And that one acceptance, the other option would have been, okay, I'm at a bar, the weed's getting me a little up and answer. Maybe I'll drink 7 whiskey shots and then I'll forget about it. And then you kind of bury it for a minute.
Yeah.
That doesn't fix it. That voice will come back and come back until you finally just say, okay, do your worst, motherfucker. If that's it, I'm still happy.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, cool. That's just what I was trying to tell you in the first place. You know, that's that kind of feeling that you get. It's like, all right, now I'm on the other side. It's pretty fucking cool. And it's a simple choice that you can make to just face it. And it, I think that's with anything, really. Just face it. You know, if you're in a hole, you know, instead of being panicking about being in a hole, just get a shovel, dig through the bottom of the hole and see what's on the other side of that shit.
I like that.
Yeah.
Instead of saying construct a ladder, your advice is to fucking keep going down.
How bad can this feel? You know, my heart's broken. Let's see how much I can eviscerate it, rip it apart, and then see what happens.
Yeah.
At the point that you're staring straight into the heart of your fear, it disappears. You know, it's only when you're trying to look away that it you know has hold over you, has power over you.
This is I call what you're saying insider information, because because it's something that you, if you haven't been inside, you don't. I speak from my own personal experience, because you hear people saying these fucking things when you haven't been there, and you're like, what are you talking about? I do not. I wouldn't want to live in that place. Yeah. Or you hear about, you know, the Buddha sitting at the edge of the char pits watching bodies decompose. Or you see the Shaivites on the banks of the Ganges River drinking out of human skulls. Or you see all the different variations of this thing. And you look at that and it's completely mystifying. But people don't understand. That's a, you know, I can, my first, man, I'm probably still dumb. But I've been much, much more dumb. and so a lot of times really smart people would come to me and tell me stuff. And I would just be like, roll my eyes and be like, what the fuck are you talking about, hippie? I don't even know what you're talking about. Leave me alone. But I can remember my first encounter with this truth that you're talking about was this freak in Asheville, North Carolina was like, had this book in a coffee shop, and he showed me a picture of Kali, you know, the terrifying goddess and her necklace of skulls. And she looked so horrifying and frightening. And he said, look, he's like, this is what she looks like when you're scared of her. But when you love the mother, she comes running to you like a lover and holds you. And I can remember just being like, shut the fuck up, weirdo. You fucking Satanist. I didn't even know what Kali was. You're just like, you're a god. Are you trying to fuck me? That's all I can.
Maybe. Those things aren't mutually exclusive, Duncan. He could have been wise and trying to fuck you. This is not either or here, but...
Oh man. So Aubrey, I want to ask you, do you ever slip back into the fear? Do you ever find yourself back in there?
Absolutely. And I have, you know, I have one of those minds that's persistent. It's hard to kill. It resurfaces a lot. And for me, it's not the fear of death. It's a fear of suffering, you know, fear of sickness, in some place. And I have to constantly kind of work through. Now, that ayahuasca session was a huge step and has diminished that entirely, and I can generally find my way back now through that same method. But if I'm not paying attention, it creeps back, you know, regularly. It creeps.
What's the method? What do you mean the method?
Well, there's you know, several different methods. I mean, some is just, you know, real, you know, good meditation, you know, and just sitting down, relaxing, processing it, remembering the wisdom and the truth that I've experienced through all of these, you know, times throughout my life. And then I can get back to that place, just kind of being quiet and doing my own little rituals. I burn some good smelling things.
Do you mind telling us the exact ritual, what you do?
Yeah. So I have a little altar and it has, you know, Buddha on it, some pictures of my ancestors and some artifacts that I've collected from different places, you know, New Mexico, Peru, you know, Costa Rica, some of the African artifacts from the Aboga ceremony and all things that are kind of sacred to me. And I just, sit there peacefully. I light the Palo Santo usually, which is kind of my favorite incense. And
Palo Santo.
Yeah. Have you ever smelled that?
Yeah.
Oh shit, I got some actually for you.
Oh, let's thank you very much.
You want to light it up?
Let's
too?
Torch it right now.
Let's do this.
Now this is what this is does not look like incense to me. This looks
it's an actual piece of a very sweet smelling wood from a tree that grows native in the Amazon. And so this is like the Amazonian sage right here. This is
Wow. Holy shit. Thank you, Aubrey. Wow. Cool, man. Oh, wow. The smell is... Well, I'm such a goddamn placebo effect person that I'm going to say it's giving me a deja vu, but that's, I am definitely going to take ayahuasca.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one of the cool things about this for me is when I first smelled it, the times were actually in the rainforest. So it has that kind of, it brings me back to those times when I was at my probably spiritual peak, you know, just kind of lit up from all the ayahuasca and the cleansing. So it kind of draws me back to that period.
It's a very clean smell. It's a very, it's like, I like it much more than I like sage. I'm not a big sage fan, but this is like a, yeah, this is a very psychedelic, amazing, unique smell. I've never smelled it before. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, man.
So you burn this.
You burn this, and then I have a couple different methods that I use. One of my favorite methods is I try and, you know, when you close your eyes, sometimes you'll get little pictures, kind of ephemeral pictures going through your head.
Yes.
And to quiet my thoughts and my rational mind, I'll actually start following those pictures into whatever they'll become.
What do you think those are? Is that your third eye?
It could be. It's a weird, it's that, it's kind of in that boundary between waking and dreaming. You know, you start to get, I start to notice those. And a few times where I've caught myself kind of in that threshold, I start to see those. So it's this, something that goes on behind the surface in the mind. I don't really have a good theory.
Does it feel like there's a movement to these images?
Absolutely.
As though you're going in the direction of something?
Absolutely.
You know, that's what I've noticed with those, is it feels like you're suddenly on some trip, or you're moving, you know, it's move. There is a forward motion to what to these things. I wonder what that is.
I don't know, but that's kind of what I follow, and I will follow that and focus on my breath. And the key is to kind of quiet the mind, and I'll tend to drop into a state eventually where I can actually start thinking about issues. But the first challenge is to get my brain to kind of quiet down. And that's one of my better techniques, is to follow the images, think about the breath. Otherwise, my monkey brain is just going to keep chattering constantly, you know. So I have to break that down a little bit before I can get into the right mode.
So this is, you're sitting?
Mm-hmm.
Do you sit in the lotus position or anything?
Man, I'm not that flexible. I wish I was.
So
yeah,
painful.
Indian style for a little while, and then I'll have like a cushion that I'll sit on to kind of, you know, help the hips a little bit for the Indian style. And then I'll just lie down too. You know, I'm not afraid to just go straight on my back. You know, I don't fall asleep easy, so it's not really a high risk position for me
just to pass out. Right.
So it usually goes that. So like, you know, Indian style, and then into kind of a Shavasana position.
Do you practice yoga a lot?
Not as much as I should, but that's another thing that I really love to do when I actually do it. But, you know, it's hard to find the time, not only just to do the yoga, but to go to the studio. It's hard for me to do a full yoga session on my own. I probably need to break that barrier.
Yes.
And be able to lead myself through one.
Oh, man. I've got to do it around. There has to be people around me to do it. I mean, I do sun salutations,
but
that's about it.
Yeah.
So this meditation, so you follow these third eye weird images, and mm-hmm. then you get into the part of your mind that's chattering, and then do you have do you go into mindfulness? Is that what you would call this type of meditation?
I would say so. Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. It's really my own kind of method. You know, I haven't really learned, you know, I've learned about different things and the different things, the chants you can say and all that, and none of that's ever really worked too well for me. And this is the method that I find most appealing, probably because it's similar to what I do when I do psychedelics, which is kind of the way for me. You know, I have a thick skull. I sometimes need the sledgehammer of the mushrooms to actually get it to, hey, stop, you know, stop being, you know, being crazy.
I think that is a part that it is a sledgehammer effect. And I, you know, my last mushroom trip, man, my last real mushroom trip, like, I'm a big fan of micro doses of mushrooms, mm-hmm. where you take very small amounts and it creates this kind of euphoric state.
Sure.
But my last, like, big, shouldn't have listened to Terrence McKenna before I did this, you know, like, take heroic doses. Like, I took a huge dose, and the sense I got was like, it was just they were entities. I was swarmed by, for lack of a better word, elves,
mm-hmm.
and which I always see when I'm on mushrooms or whatever those things. You know what I mean? Those, when you say elves, anyone who, it's not like
How big were they? How big are they when you see them?
They're, oh, my friend, they vary. I see, like, but they, the, I see these, when I say, it's like primordial, archetypical, animistic, humanoid beings that have a wild quality to them and seem either mildly amused or even irritated by the sudden link in consciousness of someone being able to see them. This was like a, my experience was, there are two parts to it. The first part was eating these mushrooms, being in a hotel room because we were at the spa, and then putting my hands on the bed and seeing my fingers like extend out, flow out into the bed, and just, I'm like, oh no, oh no, this is not, this was like in like, within, you know, 30 minutes, this is the beginning of the trip, and you're all, my hands are already melting, like I'm fucked, because I was not, I didn't want to, I don't know what, I wasn't thinking clearly about it. I did it wrong, but anyway, walking towards a lawn chair to go and lay down, and then this like resonant, that still small voice that isn't quite your voice. Mm-hmm. I hear this voice saying,
"We are the eternal guardians of the universe, and we have deep work to do on you now."
And like, like that, and that too is like, no, no eternal, no fucking guardians of the universe, He-Man bullshit. I wanted to float in the spa, maybe like see some bright colors. Back off, fuck faces. Yeah. And then I, because all resistance, pure resistance at the end of a relationship, broke every rule of psychedelics. I basically just broke every rule of psychedelics. Uh-huh. And it was the classic, like, being taken to task by whatever that thing is for being an irresponsible dolt. And so then it was laying on the, on this lawn chair. And, it seemed like, like, if imagine if, like, I guess it's the way cats probably see human kids, where it's like the human kids, when they get around a cat, they don't want to hurt the cat. They're not thinking like, I want to hurt this cat, but they're like still going to push it around and grab its paws and pull its ears and poke it and throw it around a little bit. But it's, they're not malicious. It was that same sense of these like youthful, super advanced things identified that I was aware of them and then started like, swimming through my body. It was like there was swimming through me, and then that's when I started praying, because I was like, oh God, please, please God help me, please God help me, please God help me, please God help me. And then they were like mocking that prayer in my head, going, please God help me, please God help me, please. You know, whatever that is, you know, whether or not these are actual interdimensional being children that are just playing around with a big, fat, dopey hippie who ate too many mushrooms, or whether or not it's like my own realization of how my prayer is bullshit, or that's like not whatever the bullshit part of me that's like, whatever it was my face was getting shoved in it. And then after that experience, I've kind of felt like, well, I think I'm going to give mushrooms a rest for a little while.
That's a wild story. You know, I've felt a lot of these beings, but they've never been as mischievous as a lot of the people say. You know, I get them in the DMT experiences when I experience them the most. And they all tend to be like 1,000. They tend to be very micro usually. And it's like 1,000 little doctors just tweaking things, like, like tweaking my organs, tweaking my head. And then sometimes bigger beings will come. Like a giant foo dog one time, like, attached itself to my chest.
Oh, what?
Like, you know those Chinese foo dogs you see out of, like Chinese food restaurants?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
This big one comes up and bites me on the chest. Because, like, and then starts, like, glowing with light and, like, getting hotter and brighter and brighter. I'm like, whoa. You know, like, weird things. Or a hummingbird will come in and, like, pierce my throat and start, like, drinking nectar out of my throat and then like pushing something back in. I've had hover ships like pull smoke out of me, and then this other really metallic one came in and beamed this light underneath my tongue. I've had weird stuff like that, but nothing like as mischievous as a lot of people talk about.
Probably because you're cool.
I don't know about that.
It's just you probably because you have your energy is very balanced, and and you have this focused energy of somebody who's been doing work on themselves for a while.
Right.
So I think when you've been doing that, the psychedelic experience, you don't get like that initial, because it's the initial attacks that lead you in the direction of being like, shit, man, I got to fucking work on, I got to like start working on myself. Like my mind is insane. And so but now there's a few things I want to talk about that you, earlier you mentioned that you had taken Ibogaine.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit, were you addicted? Oh, did you take it to get out? Were you addicted to something?
So we went to I went to this clinic out in Costa Rica, and they do two different ceremonies. It was a 10th generation Bwiti shaman who's gone down there to do some work. I can't recommend that same clinic anymore because there's some things going on with that. But I can speak about the medicine itself. So there's two programs. One is the heroin addiction recovery program.
Right.
The other they call the psycho-spiritual program, which is basically just take it and go on a journey. And that's the one I signed up for. And that's a fucking trip. That's completely different than anything else. So you read about it, and you know it's going to be a 16 to 24-hour trip itself, which you can't really fathom when you're thinking about it. Like, yeah, right. I'm sure it's just like the glow of it. But the first thing you do, you know, he has you write down a bunch of questions. It's like, write down all these questions, and you'll get to them. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I wrote down like 10 questions. He's like, more questions. I'm like, okay, I have more questions. Fine. And then you take it, and takes a while to kick in. So it was about 2 hours. I thought nothing was happening, but I was getting kind of antsy. And then all of a sudden I could feel my heartbeat starting going doof, 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 like a very stimulant effect. And Ibogaine itself is a very stimulatory drug, and which is one of the reasons why you have such a long trip. And then it kind of snapped in, and I literally felt like I had a blinking cursor that I could point to any direction in my life, in the universe, ask any question I wanted, and the voice of my own higher self would come and tell me the answer. Just straight up, no bullshit. I mean, with ayahuasca, it's like there's all this information out there from source, and you're pulling this information. It's crashing against your perception and creating these amazing pictures, and they're kind of like riddles. You're trying to figure them out, and maybe you figure some of them out. Some of them are just complete nonsense. You can't translate it, you know, but it's like information that has no translation. With the Iboga, it's literally just telling you, hey, dummy, like, stop doing that, stupid. You know,
right.
It just broke me down immediately right from the start. It's like, okay, you have three parts. One part is mind boy. That's the thing you take so much pride in about your mind. It's like a juvenile little child, and you need to shut it up and get it out of the way. And then there's your true self, and that's what you need to bring to bear. And, you know, your third eye, that kind of consciousness, awareness, your true eternal self. And that's who needs to be driving the ship. And then your third part, we're going to call him Mud Body. And Mud Body likes to fuck, he likes to fight, he likes to do these different things, and this is what makes you up. And it just started breaking down my whole psychology and telling me, like, this is where you're screwed up in so many different ways. It went through so many different things, but, you know, some parts were, there was one really kind of funny part. So I'm sitting there, and it's horribly uncomfortable, too. You're completely, like, unbearably nauseous, like more nauseous than you've ever been. When you open your eyes, it's like, you're looking through one of those old TV screens that's not getting reception well. There's like lines of static. Your body's hot, and it feels like you're in a high voltage shed. You can hear this palpable buzz the whole time. So eventually I knew I had to piss. It was like 5-6 hours in. It's like I had to piss. So I get up and I go to the bathroom. And I go to the bathroom, I go to take a piss, and I see that my dick had shrunk to the smallest possible size of any human being could ever have. It was like as hard as a rock. It had like the density of Pluto, because it was all like sucked in. It was like dick jerky, you know. It was like no fluid in it at all. And I was like, oh my God, what is happening to me? But it was like such a strong stimulant that it takes everything out of your body. So I was looking at it, and I started to panic, because I'm on, you know, this crazy psychedelic.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, I gotta fix this. I started to rub it, like try to get it back to life. It wouldn't come back to life. I was like, okay, look, I can do this. I can think about pussy, and it'll get some blood flow going
down. Oh no.
It's the worst thing you could possibly do on Iboga is think about pussy. Because I started to understand the pussy. Like I understood why each fold was there and how that little anteater droppy thing comes in and collects
as the scientists call it.
Yeah, yeah. And sucks the sperm up. And I was like, oh no, this is terrible. But everything you think about, you have like an amazing, impeccable understanding of, from your own life to things you don't want to hear. I actually was with my fiance at the time, and I thought we were going to get married. And Iboga was like, yeah, you're not going to get married to her. She's not the one for you. And I was like, what? What the fuck are you talking about? Like, you're wrong. This is bullshit. Like, that's wrong. And I argued with the Iboga higher self for like a couple hours, and you have time to just argue with with the higher powers that be. And
what do you think those higher powers are, Aubrey?
This one, in this particular case, you know, I don't know. All these entities and things, the jury's still out for me. I really feel like we need like the LeBron James of tripping to go and like trip and talk to one of these entities and find some crucial information that can prove it one way or another.
Right.
But that hasn't happened, so I don't know if that's us or them. But this clearly was and felt like my higher self. Like I was communicating with whatever part of me existed in the non-material world.
When you earlier were talking about the ayahuasca visions and you said you use the term source. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
You know, that's my vocabulary for God, really. That's what I'm most comfortable saying. So for me, as all right, I asked the Iboga about what is, you know, what's the nature of the universe and God. And Iboga showed me something that I think has been my analogy. Usually he was just talking to me, just chatting like, hey, this is this. When I asked about God, it kind of shut up. Like it said, all right, I can't describe this to you in words. I'm going to have to show you. And it showed me the universe as this giant heartbeat and all the planets as they explode out in the Big Bang. They're like blood cells reaching the extremities of the known universe. And eventually they run out of energy and collapse back and then explode again.
Yeah.
So this kind of infinite Big Bang. And then the nature of God, it showed me, was this kind of ephemeral blue Titan looking thing that was just running. And it was running to keep the heart pumping. And that was its only purpose, was to say yes, to say like, I'll keep running so that this heartbeat keeps going and new worlds keep exploding. And that was its purpose, that kind of force of life that says yes, yes to creation, yes to the heartbeat of the universe, and yes to life, yes to order.
So you saw Krishna.
Yeah, maybe. You know what? If that had been my kind of tradition, I bet you that's what that
well,
figure
Krishna's
would look
blue,
like.
Blue, you know.
Really? Yeah, I don't know that.
Have you read the Bhagavad Gita?
I haven't. And oh. I should.
Oh, you should. Yeah. You everything you just described is sort of the. It's interesting. It of course, the expansion of the universe and the collapse of the universe. It's considered to be. Their scales of time are fascinating. So they talk about like one day of Brahma is like. I don't know. I'll make up a number, you know, 500,000 human years or mm-hmm. some incredible span of time. And so there are these infinite cycles that happen. And the cycles are made up of periods of time called yugas. So right now we're in what's called Kali Yuga, which is the final cycle of this particular expansion of the breath of Brahman. And then at the end of the age of Kali Yuga, all the energy gets sucked back in. And so it's definitely compared to a thing that's breathing mm-hmm. in and out and in and out. And then also Krishna talks about, I wish I could remember the exact verse, but it's very similar to your trip, which is just that the necessity of action and mm-hmm. how Krishna says, you know, I'm everything, and if I stop acting, then all the universe
that's
will
crazy.
Fall apart. I can read. I'll show
that's
you the. I'll show you the exact verse. Yeah. But yeah, that's the. And for whatever reason, that entity is blue, and I've never understood why. But they describe it as the color of storm clouds, blue.
Yeah,
like it's fascinating. Yeah. It's
that's wild, man.
Well,
I've never read that. I mean, I'm familiar with some of the things, but I've just. Never that story at all.
Well, this is the, the story of Carl Jung when he was in the, did you ever hear this? He worked at a mental asylum and he also had been this like, he's this brilliant, you know who Carl Jung is?
Mm-hmm.
So,
father of the archetype.
Yes. And, sort of when he started getting tipped off to this, what seems to be this idea that like imprinted in our neurology is the gods are inside of our brains. They're inside of us. He was in a mental asylum and there was a lunatic who was raving about very specifically about how the sun has a cock and the cock of the sun coming down to the earth and really describing it in all these great, great detail. And Carl Jung is listening to this. He's like, wait, hold on. I've heard this before. And what this guy in a mental asylum in Germany, I think, was describing was identical to a religion of this indigenous tribe that Carl Jung had read about in some rare manuscript that he had. So then suddenly he's like, okay, what the fuck is this, man?
Too coincidental.
Too coincidental. So how is this man, who never had any contact in any no one's had contact with this religion, suddenly raving about this thing? And so, yeah, that was the beginning of this notion of like, oh, well, there must be imprinted within our very neurology these symbols, systems, you know, which I believe that we project out into the swirl of phenomena.
So was he saying that it was more like DNA based, or was it the collective unconsciousness that was an existence outside of, you know, the human material being itself?
I don't know either. I that's a great question, though. I mean, that's what you know, people who take psychedelics, that's something that we all always, this it's a question that we all end up coming up to, right? Which is, are we seeing a thing external to ourselves that exists external to us, or are we seeing a projection of ourselves into chaos? And there's a lot of different ways to put that. The answer is both. And this is forgive me for saying the answer is, like, I've what an asshole.
I like the boldness, though. I believe it. I was like, yeah,
that was
awesome.
Accidental boldness.
That was great. You should say more things. The answer is.
Anytime you're saying that, you especially you raise the finger right up your ass. there's a term, and I always miss. I don't pronounce it correctly. You can look it up. There's an actual Wikipedia page dedicated to it. But it's something like asinka sinka beta tattva, which means simultaneous oneness and difference, which is the idea that this thing that you're talking about, this great breathing superorganism, which consists of the stars and the planets and all the minuscule aspects of the stars and the planet, of which we're one little part, this thing simultaneously exists as one unified field of consciousness, undifferentiated, and also as a thing broken to smithereens, schizophrenic and amnesiac. Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, there's another, have you ever heard of the Ha'oponopono?
No.
Ha'oponopono philosophy. It's the Hawaiian kahunas have this philosophy, and it's kind of both a psychology and a philosophy, that a way to interact with different people. And their philosophy is that inside all of us is, you know, that piece of source, divine life, whatever. And at the very root, that part is not part of the material world. And as it's not part of the material world, it doesn't have defining characteristics. It is just source. It is just God. It is just life, whatever your vocabulary permits. And intrinsically, that's all the same. It's everything else that's piled upon it that's different. So the theory that they have is that if you want to change anything in anybody else, all you have to do is look inside to this mutual peace that you share with that person and meditate and focus on fixing and forgiving that part in yourself, and it will affect other people. And as the story goes, this one pretty famous kahuna, it's the story's written in this book called Zero Limits, which is really interesting and a little bit kooky at the same time. But the story goes that he went to his mental institute in Hawaii and practiced the Ha'oponopono philosophy and completely cleared out the mental hospital.
Wow.
Is the word. It's just, he ended up healing all these different people. And it's pretty cool kind of philosophy for both not only clearing patterns in your own life, but actually working on different relationships. And you say, you know, these four things. You say, thank you, I'm sorry, I love you, forgive me.
That's
what you say to clear this energy.
You say it to yourself.
Say it to yourself. Always to yourself. You say it to that part of yourself.
That is the MDMA trip there, isn't it?
It is.
That's it, man. Because when you take MDMA, that is that's if you take it in the right way, not at the UFC.
Who would ever do something like that?
Me? But that's a recreational use of the drug. God damn it, it does have recreational uses. You know, it's not all just to, like, forgive yourself. But when I can remember my first experience with MDMA. What did you call this meditation?
Ha'oponopono.
Ha'oponopono. I did it. I remember I my first experience with ecstasy when it kicked in was that I realized oh my God, I've hated myself for so long. Mm-hmm. And then you look in, you're like, oh, you're fine. You're fine.
Yep.
I love you. Oh, why did I hate you like that? And then all of a sudden, then that thing glows inside of you. Oh, man, that's a great feeling, isn't it?
It is a great feeling.
Oh, it's absolutely so great to forgive yourself.
And, you know, if we had lived at one with this kind of Ho'oponopono philosophy, we probably wouldn't need MDMA. You know, we've kind of stayed on the course. The problem is all of our train tracks have been way the fuck off course.
Yeah.
So we need these heavy earth movers, as I like to call them sometimes, like MDMA, to really get back to a place where we can actually go there and you know, have a meditation like that where you can look in yourself, truly forgive, and find that inner self-love.
Yes, and that does, the moment you do that, you know, that's when everything, you know, recently I was all fucked up over this girl, and like, I was all, well, my mom, everything was falling apart. My mom had passed away, I was screwy, everything was screwy.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond, that's a really, it's, shitty word to use for it. Things are screwy. My mom died. What's going on?
It's a tough fucking stretch.
Yeah, it was, but it was chaos, and it was just like the, you know, a friend of mine put it really well. It's just like, it really, you know, when a parent passes away, it really shakes up your snow globe. And mm-hmm. That's a great way to put it. So anyway, but really what was happening was I was going into a victim place. You know, mm-hmm. I was going into and I couldn't help it. But when I went to this meditation retreat with Ram Dass, it was like this experience, you know, of like getting back to this sense of like, because in that situation, instead of it being MDMA forgiving you and showing you love, it's just all these people have been working on themselves for years and years and years in a non-phony way,
mm-hmm.
just loving you and loving you and loving you. And then that does this exact same thing where all of a sudden it's like, oh, I remember now.
Yeah, if all these strangers love me, I should love myself too. Yeah, you know?
And it starts you know, it shows you that light again. And then right after that, everything worked out with the girl, and everything worked out. Everything went back to a place of productivity. And it's not like I'm ever going to get over, you never get over your parent passing away, but everything became equalized and stabilized from this finding that love inside of you, which seems to be the most important practice, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, I think there's also, you know, I've been getting into kind of the Toltec philosophy as well from Don Miguel Ruiz. I got to spend some time with him as well. And that's, you know, really his main push is just to have ruthless self-love for yourself, to not permit anything else. And so when you get in these cycles, he actually tells a story of one woman who was, as you know, they, as he said, you know, kind of addicted to that suffering victim complex. And he told her, he said, all right, here's what you're going to do. Whenever that happens, whenever you start feeling sorry for yourself and start getting this suffering, he said, go in the mirror and look in the mirror and say, I am a parasite that is addicted to suffering. And he's just ruthless with it. And so she was like, no, I don't want to do that. He's like, yeah, go in the mirror and say that. Until eventually she became aware that part of her is kind of a parasite that's feeding and addicted to suffering itself.
Wow, man. Yeah. That's great.
It was cool.
I am a parasite that's addicted to suffering. I just want to suffer, and I just want to hate myself,
right.
And I just want to shit all over my precious life for as long as I can until I die miserable and alone, because that's what I like.
That's it.
I know that guy.
That's the expansion. And then for them, that's what allows, that awareness is what allows you to break it, because then you realize, oh, shit, I don't want to be that anymore.
Who is that? What am I doing? And I, you know, these thoughts that come into your head when you find yourself like tisking your life or this thing, you think if this person was outside of me.
Oh, yeah, you'd punch him.
I'd punch him. I'd never be friends with him. I'd never call him. But somehow, because it's in my mind, suddenly this is like, oh, yes, he's right. Oh, yes, yeah, totally right. Very interesting.
That's the parasite.
That is the parasite. Mm-hmm. And it is a parasite. But this is a really curious place, which is that, you know, this is what Ram Dass says, is the trick here, the ruthless self-love. It doesn't mean we just love ourselves. You got to love the parasite too. That's what they say is like, even that thing this ruthless self-love is even that fucking thing you start showing unconditional positive regard for. Like, mm-hmm. okay, you poor, I can't do it.
It gets hard. It's good to see these advanced teachings get a little more challenging.
Yeah, yes, they do. And here's two things that you've talked about, which when you hear them, it sounds so easy. One, surrender to death, and two, love yourself unconditionally and ruthlessly. Mm-hmm. And if you were to pull these two things off,
got a big smile on your face.
You're going to get cops are going to start stopping you to search you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. For sure. But these two things, you know, sorry, you guys, I've said this before, but I've never told Aubrey. When I got to meet Ram Dass, the thing he said to me, and it was very simple, but he said, he pointed to his forehead and he said, you have to move from here and then to his heart, to here. And I said, well, that's so difficult. And he smiled in this, you know, you're in front of Ram Dass, you know, yeah. And he just smiled in this beautiful way. He's like, no, it isn't. You know, it isn't hard.
Right.
It's the fucking parasite that tells you it's hard.
Yep.
That shit ball parasite. It's like, no, so hard to make that move.
Yeah.
Better to stay up here in the attic with the old fucking rugs and old musty stuffed and balmed
yeah.
memories from your life.
Yeah, you know, they say that spending some time with Don Miguel Ruiz was pretty cool because, you know, they came up with kind of that concept of the warrior. And the warrior for them is a person who is dedicated to fighting basically the parasite, you know, and battling the parasite. That is the battle that the warrior undertakes. It's not being, you know, holding a sword and brandishing a weapon. It's the battle with your own mind, those own demons that you have, and coming to terms with that. And basically, you know, how they say the parasite kind of develops is that, you know, they call the dream of the world, they call it the mitote. It's what society thinks. It's what you're supposed to do. It's all of these expectations that you have for yourself and society has for you that no one can possibly live up to, you know? So this voice gets to judging you based on that.
What's the term for that again?
The mitote, the dream of the world.
Ah.
Yeah. So because you're never going to fit into that, this voice starts to say, oh, you're not good enough. You're not good enough to be this. And you start judging yourself and it just kind of develops. And then from there, the first step is awareness. And then from awareness, you got to eradicate it by, you know, as you said, probably the most powerful way to do it is that Ho'oponopono philosophy of just loving it. Say, hey, I recognize you. You are a parasite, but I love you too because you're part of me. And at the point that you can do that, then you've really taken the power from it. Then you've just robbed it of all of its venom.
Yes.
You know, and it turns from a vicious cobra to a little worm.
To Gollum.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just this poor, pathetic thing that wants power. And it's just and you know, who knows? Maybe you love it enough and that it'll actually transform into something useful. I imagine it would. I imagine the parasite has within it the potential to, once you get that thing on your side, you know, these things that you're talking about, they get us closer and closer to a state of non-differentiation and a state of unified consciousness that I think is the place that the saints live in, where they go through these steps, and each step gets you closer and closer and closer to non-existence, when I say non-existence, I mean the opposite of what we consider to be existence, which is probably what we consider to be existence is non-existence.
Right.
So this is the birthing of the soul. Have you heard of Gurdjieff?
No, I haven't.
You would love him. The way he put it was, we are spiritual machines, and most people are all assemblages of imitation. So it's sort of like you're born, children are one of the amazing things human children do. All babies do is they imitate. And they do it quickly, because the faster you can imitate your parents, the
quicker you survive.
Yes. So all this imitation happens early on, and then you forget that you've done the imitating. And so now every single action that you do, every movement, every twitch, every nuance, every overt thing, Gurdjieff would say, you're just a robot that's locked into autopilot, and you don't, he said, you don't start with a soul. You have to grow a soul. You have to.
Whoa.
Isn't that amazing? And you sort of like, so the idea is through this process, you shake off the mechanical, imitative persona that you have worn. It's basically you just put on a suit that your parents and all the important people. You take that thing off and you exist in this sort of like naked state of instantaneous. Yes.
Yeah. That's the idea. And, you know, as we're thinking about this, one thing that I wanted to talk to you about in the first place is, you know, imagine if, and I've just been speaking a lot with Daniele, so this is kind of in my head. He's talking about creating your own religion. I was thinking about creating our own church. So let's say we wanted to create the best church for people possible, right?
Yeah.
That church would be put on the most beautiful landscape possible. You know, imagine some epic landscape where you could go to. Maybe there was one in every different environment. So there was the mountain church, there was the sea church, there was the woods. And then in that place, you had different shamans from these cultures offering the entheogenic ceremony. So you have the ayahuasca shaman that you could go to that day, or you have the, you know, the mushroom Maria Sabina shaman,
yes,
like I went to out there. You have the peyote sweat lodge there. And then you have people like Ram Dass coming in to give, you know, to give speeches, or Don Miguel to talk about this one day. I mean, that is the kind of place that would be amazing to go to just reconnect. You wouldn't have to go every Sunday, but let's just say it was there and be like, oh man, I'm just feeling off. I want to go to the Church of Experience right now.
Yes.
And get some shit happening. But instead, churches are these clusterfucks that just breed guilt and contempt for yourself and all kinds of things. But imagine if we could create another one.
You know, I love thinking about that. Because when you think about that, what you start, the next thing that falls is like, well, if those things existed in mass, then I think we'd be 20 years away from a time machine, or, you know, we'd be turning the corner into like the where we're probably going to go to anyway. I don't think you can, you know, these churches you described, you know what they're called? Church. I don't know what these assholes are doing now, but what you just described, if you go and look at, you know, there's a great book called Marijuana. I can't remember. It's the history of the religious use of marijuana. And, you know, it talks about how in early Christian ceremonies, in Judaic ceremonies, they would burn hash and you'd just be breathing in this like intoxicant as you were chanting. And there was this incredible connectivity that happened. But what's happening now is the emergence of a new religion is forming.
I agree. Absolutely. And, you know, all of these different methods, you know, we've been talking a lot about psychedelics, but as you said, you don't need to do that. I mean, meditation will get you there. Flotation tanks can get you there. There's all kinds of ways that you can get to these experiences. Just some particularly thick-headed monkeys like me and maybe you.
And me.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah. Need to get whacked over the head with something a little stronger.
I enjoy getting whacked over the head in a lot of different ways. But this thing that you're talking about, I think that there's a momentum in the direction of. Even the word religion, I think, is you know, these sons of bitches, they've taken all these symbols and they've shit all over them. They've hijacked them. So it's like, it's almost like you need all new symbols, because whenever you say religion to anyone these days, they think of their parents making them wear an uncomfortable shirt and dragging them to listen to somebody say things they didn't understand in Latin. But ultimately,
many bad associations with religion.
Well, but that's the, you know, this the parasite took over religion, and but what you're talking about is in the same way that the planet wants to grow forests, I think the planet wants to grow this thing, and a natural expansion of the thing after all of us like exchange enough bits of information, and hopefully the information gets out to more motivated people than us. That's what I always think. If I just keep yapping about this, someone will actually act.
Yeah,
but and I think you see it in small ways. Like Alex Gray is creating his
Chapel of Sacred Mirrors.
Yes,
or something like that. Yeah.
You see these kinds of like things emerging. But the problem is, as with all true religions, the powers that be will throw you in the dungeon if you
Our old draconian system will come and lock you away for your own fucking good.
Exactly, man. Yeah. And this is not a new thing. This has been the story of religion from any time a great new religion forms, like early Christianity, when you had these lunatics in a practicing, what did you call it?
Ha'oponopono.
Ha'oponopono, practicing this Ha'oponopono, which is this, you know what? I'm not afraid of, I don't care if you kill me. Go ahead and kill me. Yeah. Throw me into the goddamn lions. I'm going to love you no matter what.
Right.
And I'm going to forgive myself, and I'm going to be connected with the universe, and I'm going to be a representation of what humans can be. I think that's why Christ always would refer to himself as, I'm the son of man, the son of man, the son of man. Manson! No! But look what happened to them. Crucifixions, executions, you know, and the only time that people stopped killing the sons of bitches is when they started killing other people. And then it flipped around, and then they became the thing that they were being persecuted by, you know. And now they hate the gays, and they fucking, who knows, they like war, and they like drones. And I don't, not all the, there's so much, that's not fair to package them all.
Right, right, right. But, you know, the thing about the Bible, it's just this bundle of contradictions. So pretty much whatever the fuck you want to do, you can get biblical justification
absolutely.
For it. You know, and it's like, it almost feels like they intentionally did it that way. Like, let's write this so if you want to be good, you can be good. If you want to be a real dick, you can follow these other passages and, you know, have justification for any kind of violence. Whereas a philosophy like Ha'oponopono, you know, there's only one real interpretation of how that's going to work.
You know? Well, you know, I think that there's, you know, and the way this information springs up, it has a varied ways it springs up. And the way that they say there's different forms of yoga, because there's the acknowledgement that there's different types of people. Mm-hmm. So some people like the initiatory process of being taken from suddenly realizing that the tapestry that they've been walking on their whole lives is in fact a very detailed map that can lead them into a super advanced state of hyper consciousness that I think can come from practicing real Christianity, especially, as I said before, taking LSD and reading the New Testament will definitely like help you understand a little bit more of what's going on, you know, especially because like, if you look at the stories that Jesus said, the parables, if you are an alien species and you wanted to communicate big bits of information to a bunch of different planets, what would you do? You would look at their reproductive cycles and their food source. And so many of the parables are about grain, seeds, and marriage, which are all primary components to the life of our species. So it's like, it is as though an advanced intelligence picked out shit that would last throughout as long as there's life. Because the moment that we stop fucking, or the moment that food goes away, then there's no point in telling stories anymore anyway, because we're all dead.
Game over.
But, I think what you're saying, I'm sorry to go on a little tangent, I think what you're saying about this idea of like there being churches, I think it's very good to get that idea out there. And even church is the wrong goddamn word for it. It's like whatever you want to call it, but it's a place where people can get together, get in the presence of humans who've really been working on themselves for a long, long time, get some of that spark, mix it in with psychedelics. If you don't want psychedelics, here's Vipassana meditation, or here's all we're doing is like, here's what I learned.
Yeah.
I've run into these people. I've had these experiences.
And find your own way. You know, have different rooms. Here's the flotation tank room. Here's the yoga room. Here's the Vipassana room. Here's the, you know, psychedelic ceremony room. And just bring all this information together and just allow people to say, hey, this is what I want to dial in for my life. This is what's going to help my spiritual growth at this point. I mean, that is the ideal. You know, that I think ultimately as a species, if we had that, God, I mean, the whole, that's a game changer.
If only,
you know,
there
the whole
was
thing
a,
changes.
If only there was a wealthy psychonaut entrepreneur who would take the time to do this. Well, maybe someone out there is listening.
Man, I could only hope.
Hey, if you're out there and you hear this, you should talk to Aubrey.
Well played, Duncan. Well played.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Thank you so much. This has been a delight.
This has been awesome.
Thank
man.
You
we'll
very
have
much.
To do it again.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Anytime you're in town, just let me know so we can repeat this.
We'll cue
Thank
it
you.
Up. All right, brother. Take care.
Take care. Thanks for listening, everyone. You are hearing the Acaro de las Tribus from Don Evangelo Morey's El Cuento del Tiempo Ayahuasca Acaros, which is available on iTunes. So download it. This is a really great album with a bunch of it. It chorus are the songs that shamans sing when you're drinking ayahuasca, and they're all really psychedelic and quite soothing. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, give us a nice rating on iTunes. Until next time, hail Monsanto.
Tikunai murayai, murayi yoi murayai, anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Tikunai murayai, murayi yoi murayai, anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Dansa dansa de lam kito, tikunai ya ri 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 ri. Limpia limpia cuerpecito, Wankinsito ne, tukui tukui yariri, almasitai ne, tukui tukui yariri, cuerpecito ne, talaran laran larai, alaran larai, ri 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 ri. Tribo tribo ikurakaini, shambu ri 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 ri, tribo tribo ikurakaini, Shambu ri 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 ri, anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Dansa dansa de lam tito, tikuna ya ri 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 ri. Limpia limpia cuerpecitos, huanquincito ni, tukui tukui ya ri ri, almasita ni. Ta laran laran larai, A la 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 re 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 re. Wan bisai kura kaini, shambu ri 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 ri. Wan bisai kura kaini, shambu ri 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 ri. Anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Dansa dansa de lam tito, tikuna ya ri 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 ri. Limpia, limpia cuerpecitos, huanquincito ni, tukui tukui yariri, almasita inin. Talaran laran larai, alaran larai, talaran laran larai, alaran larai, ri 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 ri. Hui totoi kurakaini, shambu ri 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 ri, hui totoi kurakaini, Shambu ri 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 ri, anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Dansa dansa de lam tito, tikuna ya ri 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 ri. Limpia limpia cuerpecitos, huanquincito ni, tukui tukui ya ri ri, almasita ini. Ta laran laran larai, alaran larai, ta laran laran larai, alaran larai ini. Ni 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 ni. Koto au kai kurakai ni, shambu ri 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 ri. Koto au kai kurakai ni, shambu ri 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 ri. Anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Dansa dansa de lam tito, tikuna ya ri ri ri. Kura kura cuerpecitos, huanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri, almasitaini. Talaran laran larai, alaran larai. Alaran laran larai, alaran larai. Re 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 ne 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 ne. Kashi voi kurakaini, shambu ri 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 ri. Kashi voi kurakaini, shambu ri 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 ri. Anai si yo ya ri 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 ri. Dansa dansa de lam tito, tikuna ya ri ri ri. Limpia limpia cuerpecitos, huanquincito ni. Tukui tukui ya ri ri, almasita ini. Talaran laran larai, alaran larai. Alaran laran larai, alaran larai. Ri 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 ri. Bora bora ikuna kaini shamuririririri. Bora bora ikuna kaini shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza danza delantito tikuna yaririri. Limpia limpia cuerpecito juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri. Alma sitaini. Talaran laran larai. Halaran larai. Talaran laran larai. Halaran larai. De 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 de. Piro piro ikuna kaini. Shamuririririri. Piro piro ikuna kaini. Shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza danza delantito tikuna yaririririri. Limpia limpia cuerpecito juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri almasita ini. Talaran laran larai alaran larai. Talaran laran larai alaran larai. Talaran laran larai. La 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 di 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 di. Machi engai kuna kaini shamuririririri. Machi engai kuna kaini shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza danza delantito tikuna yaririririri. Limpia limpia cuerpecitos juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri almasita ini. Talaran laran larai halaran larai. Talaran laran larai halaran larai. Halaran laran larai halaran larai. Di 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 di. Kampa kampa ikura kaini shamuririririri. Kampa kampa ikuna kaini shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza danza delantito tikuna yaririririri. Kura kura cuerpecito juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri almasita ini. Talaran laran larai halaran larai. Talaran laran larai. Halaran larai. Di 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 di. Ko kamai kura kaini shamuririririri. Ko kamai kura kaini shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririririri. Danza danza delantito tikuna yaririririri. Limpia limpia cuerpecito juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri almasita ini. Talaran laran larai halaran larai. Halaran laran larai halaran larai. Di 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 di. Aguaruna ikura kaini shamuririririri. Aguaruna ikura kaini shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza danza delantito tikuna yaririri. Limpia limpia cuerpecito juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri almasita ini. Talaran laran larai halaran larai. Halaran laran larai halaran larai. Daran laran laralai halaran larai. Di 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 di. Chaya wita iwarmisita shamuririririri. Chaya wita iwarmisita shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza danza delantito perfumerita yari. Sopla sopla pomoncito juanquincito ni. Tukui tukui yariri almasita ini. Talaran laran larai halaran larai. Aguaruna igual misita, shamuririririri. Aguaruna igual misita, shamuririririri. Anaisi yo yaririririri. Danza, danza delantito, ticuna yaririri. Perfumera curandera, Juan Quincita di. Alara, 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 alara. Soplarengue yariri, pomoncito ni. Tukui tuku yariri, Juan Quincito ni. Talara, alara, 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 alara. Botachimo yariri, toda enfermedad. Talara, alara, 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 alara. Talara, alara, alara. Ha la 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 la.